Hello, workshop community. Here we are. We are back for another round of the post-apocalyptic book club. We took a month off because things, and we are back. And we've got a good crew so far, and we may even have a couple of more pop in as we go. So let's go around the table or the chair or the bottle of bourbon, whatever it happens to be, and we will see what everybody's up to. How are you there, Santa Nate?
Yeah, well, I'm doing pretty good. Just enjoying a couple drinks here.
So. I bet John's not drinking tonight. He's driving. So
yeah, unfortunately.
John doesn't drink at all anyway, so it wouldn't matter much.
That's good. So you won't get pulled over. So we're all set. So
yeah. I got some sweet tea.
Oh, boy. Man, oh, man. I had sweet tea at Cracker Barrel when I was down in Tennessee in April. And I think it was thick enough that you could put a straw in it and wouldn't fall over. There was that much friggin' sugar in it.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't have sugar in mine, so it's what I use is I have a 5-liter jug that I make my tea out of, and it's got literally a half of a teaspoon of liquid stevia, that sweet drop stuff, in it, and that's it.
That's enough, and, is it?
Yeah, it is now. It didn't used to be. I used to put 2.5 cups of sugar in that much tea, and I've backed it all. I started using the stevia, and I started off with a couple of teaspoons, and I've weaned it down. And it's not me weaning it down. It's every so often, it's like, man, this is just getting too sweet. So I back it off, and then it tastes all right, and then it gets too sweet, and I back it. It's like nature weaning me off of it.
That was like me with coffee. You know, it always used to be sweetener. And then it was just, okay, a little less. And then I still drink it with heavy cream, but, you know, some of the guys bust my balls for it. But, no sweetener in my coffee anymore, so.
Well, I drink herbal tea in the morning instead of coffee, and I just use a couple of teaspoons of monk fruit in it.
I've never tried that.
So
we have.
It is a direct sugar supplement. Sorry.
Okay. Aaron has a... like a skinny syrup thing that she heard from Amanda Willis over at SOE. We got a couple of different flavors, vanilla, maple, bourbon, pecan, little bit of, it's not much, but you only need like a capful in a cup of coffee, and it's more than enough
for those. I've heard of that. I've never tried it, but I've heard of it.
They're really good. I mean, I mainly drink black, but they're not that bad at all. I mean, I'll drink that maple bourbon all the time.
Hey, we got Nat, the preparedness guy, in here. Notice how I called him Nat, not Nate. He'll love me for that. So good to have you, Nat. Always appreciate you. And if anybody would like to join, there is the StreamYard. Just click it, put your name in. Don't be shy and come on in. If you've read the book or if you're in the process of reading the book, we will discuss it. So, yes, we've already asked what everybody's drinking, and for anybody who cares, I'm on my second old-fashioned of the evening, so we should be a good episode.
It should be a good episode.
So, we are on book 6, Enforcing Home, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to share something with you that really pissed me off earlier. It was, what was it? Okay, so all the books all along, it's like Going Home, Enforcing Home, Defending Home. And then book 8 is Home Invasion. And then it goes back to whatever and Engineering Home. So every one of them is something home, except for that one. It's Home Invasion. I'm like, why didn't he just call it Invading Home? It would have worked. Right? Yeah. Like, come on. That just pisses me off. So I got that out of the way. So what was everybody's, let's start with John there. What were your thoughts on this book? I always love hearing from you first because this is your first time through it, isn't it, John?
Yeah, and dude, like I like to fell out of my chair. I knew what was coming before it happened there at the end with Taylor when it was building up to it. And I was like, oh, no, you know, and of course, you don't know exactly what, you know, how bad it's going to be, but it's like not another, you know, and not her, you know, how can he lose any of his core people? You know, I just, I don't know, but it was, I don't know. It was good. I don't know what else to say about it, but it.
So Chris Dixon says this one was very predictable. And yeah, so
yeah.
This being, Nat says, I've still only read the first one a few times. I'm here for the spoilers. Well, we're going to, yeah. So let's get this out of the way right now. We are in book six. So we're going to spoil the hell out of the entire series up to book six. We'll do our damnedest to not go past book six because we don't want to ruin it for everybody. But yeah, so we're up to book six. So we'll spoil it for you, but we'll do our best not to, you know, whatever. Right. So, and Byron is sipping on some George Remus bourbon, which sounds really good.
I have not had that. I got a 1792 small batch right now.
Mine came from North Carolina. I can't remember the exact name of it right at the moment, and I can't see it from here, so I'm not going to subject you to me getting up and going over. So, yeah, let's get the big one out of the way. A fan favorite character dies in this book. Hey, Nate?
Yeah. I mean, I'm amazed he made it this long.
It was like a cat living on nine lives, right?
Oh, I know. That's definitely the way it seemed to him. I mean, first the gum, then, you know, we get into this. But, yeah, it was Jeff was a sad one to see go, but we got somebody to replace him with.
So, yeah. So, like I said, it's almost like Jeff was living on borrowed time because he shows up and – it's such a great scene. It's one of the most memorable scenes of the entire book series. The dude is there carrying on, joshing around with the guys, and he just about dies choking on bubblegum. And then he ends up Morgan stomps on his chest, right? Or his stomach or something, and kicks it out, which is great. And Jeff was an awesome guy, and I hated to see him go. But going back, rereading the series for seeing them my third or fourth time, I hadn't realized that Jeff bows out in the exact same book that Dalton shows up. It's it's almost like Dalton is a spiritual successor to Jeff.
Yeah.
What do you think about
how that? I see it?
Yeah. Because the thing is, I mean, Jeff was always a bit of he was a bit of a hard ass. You know, he did what he needed to do, but then Dalton takes it to 11, you know, like the old the old adage of turning it up to 11. But, you know, and he is a hard ass when he ties up Buddy, when Sarge is like, you know, let's cut the guy down and just tie him up. And Dalton's like, I ain't just going to tie him up. He's like, I can't quite picture what he did, but it was something along the lines of he had like his arms twisted because everybody who's seen it's like, damn, that's
uncomfortable. Yeah, it was the chicken wing like this.
That's what.
Exactly.
Oh that's what. Could you imagine? Oh my God.
I am so going to use that on a friend.
Oh, a friend?
It was Mark that stomped on his chest. Morgan was freaking out. That's what it was. Okay, good. And Chris Dixon says it's a predictable series thing. One person comes in and one must leave. One leaves and one must fill the void. It's true. I love Dalton, love Jeff, and it's funny that I look at those two characters kind of the same, and one comes in and one goes out in the same book. So I guess it kind of happens, right?
Yep.
Now, overall, this book felt a lot like book three. Do you remember when we had our discussion of book three? And that was the book where, I don't want to say nothing happened.
It's a filler.
Yeah. It's an entire book that basically gets Thad and Morgan to see that Jess is in the DHS camp, right?
Yeah.
The whole book is conversations and carrying on. It's world building and character building, which is great. But it all ends with, okay, now it's time to attack the camp. This book, did that feel a bit the same way to you?
I would agree with that because it started off with you find out that Billy and his crew are now working with the DHS.
Right.
The DHS got out of the buses and they're like 20 miles away from where they're at. And then they just start hitting them. You know, that little pot shots here and there. And then it culminates with the bang at the end of the book at the market.
Right. Which there was a line in there. I just heard it this morning out blowing snow and I'd forgot about it when Morgan says to Sarge, he's like, nobody's ever going to come back to the market and shop. And Sarge is like, listen, in Baghdad, an hour after a bomb, he said they were back shopping. All you got to do is clean up the intestines, he said, and people will be back. I was like, wow, that is crazy.
It's probably the truth. You hate to look at it that way, but you know, people still got to buy their stuff. People still got to eat.
You got to live.
Necessity trumps all.
That's right. Yeah. So what stuck out to you, John? Let's start with that. What was the thing that kind of jumped out and grabbed you in this book?
You know, it's hard. I'm having a really hard time, like, laying my finger on, you know, actually, I'm having a hard time separating six from seven, because I literally I listened to seven today and yesterday, and I listened to six the 2 days before that.
I get it. It's okay. And you know what? If you bleed over into seven, nobody's going to complain. We're good.
But that is a really hard thing too, because like you said, it is kind of a filler book. I mean, you do have some major stuff happening, like with, you know, Jeff and Dalton in and out, but that's probably one of the biggest things that really, you know, that stands out in the whole book as a change, because everything else is just, like you said, it was leading you from five to seven, really, and seven is like packed with action. So
absolutely. So I don't really I have a ton of notes, so it was all kind of across, you know, across the board. They started building barriers. Was that the ones they called Gabions that they were building in this one, or was that?
The Gabions have been around.
Okay. What were these ones, Nate? Do you remember?
I don't think they ever finished them.
They didn't? They just started and never really? Yeah. Okay. And what about
the bunkers is what they started in this one, right?
That's what it was, the bunkers, yeah. And then, of course, they filled full of water, and they needed
the pallets.
They needed a latrine or a bucket. Remember, Dalton finds a bucket of piss.
Yep. I mean, there is a little bit of predictable stuff in this. Like, okay, you're going to dig a hole in the ground. Yeah, you're going to need something to piss in for the girls. You're going to need something so you're not standing at a foot of water down there. And I've walked on pallets. Those pallets aren't going to last long in real life.
No, I was thinking the same thing. I'm like,
it depends on the pallets.
I was going to say a Chet pallet, right? But they also weigh 80 pounds.
Yes, they do. They're very heavy.
Chris says,
that's one thing I deal with a lot, is pallets being in my chosen profession.
Yeah, they're good. They're great. I mean, hey, you know, I just thought of something. That is technically a pallet's an empty container, isn't it, Nate?
Technically, yeah.
I could add that to the empty container series, couldn't I?
Yeah, there you go.
There we are. We just come up with another one. So Chris says, you're starting to see that Mel still loves Morgan, but I don't think she likes him much. So did that, you remember when he spits in her hand and it really pisses her off? I forget exactly how he's like, let me see your hand for a second. He's like, and she gets so mad at him.
He was cleaning something.
Yeah.
Well, first he smacked her hand, because what it was is they'd been working and her hands were sore, and so he smacked her hand, and then he spit in her hand. It was kind of like basically insult to injury.
I don't know what it was. It just felt awkward, or not, like, uncomfortable, you know. It I guess it felt real, but it was like he was stupid. Oh, we lost John. He was stupid about doing it, but it almost, I don't know, it felt like a bit of an overreaction on her part. And maybe it was just what she was. I don't know. Maybe it was just a rough time for her or something. I don't know. But
yeah, it could be.
Yeah.
I it, You can tell they're definitely been a married couple for a while.
Sure. Yes.
And they have their little spats and pushbacks and
their quirks and quirks. Yeah, yeah. Yep.
But that's, it's real life. You're going to see that. And the fact that they've stayed together and they're this solid together is a testament to who they are.
Absolutely. And as the books go on, there's no doubt that she both loves him and likes him. It's right. Just like any married couple. You know, you listen to Becky and I for 10 minutes, and some days you might think we fucking hate each other, but we don't. We just, that's just what old married couples do. You know, you push each other's buttons and you have fun and you piss each other off. And yeah, that's just part of it, right?
Yep. Yep.
So what about, what's the group? What's the leader's name that joins with the DHS?
Billy.
So Billy's group, I don't know if you'd call them pedophiles, but they're definitely sexual
deviants.
Yeah, deviants or whatever. Yeah, they're bad people. Let's put it that way.
Yep.
Was Morgan in the right to shoot Buddy in the head in the street like that?
Oh yeah, I would have. Yep. That's no questions asked. I would have done that here anyway. Somebody come after my kids, they're getting around to their head.
Oh, Yozik's over here. Sorry, Yozik. He's over in Telegram. He just said, I guess we're not talking in here. So I'm going to bring up, he said, definitely a filler book and building up. And he said, I laugh. Oh, I missed it there. No, Yozik, you can put him over there too. We'll bring you in. No worries, buddy. But yeah, so I thought so. I thought it was kind of cool how he shot him right in front of Billy. And Billy's like, you know, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it needed to happen. And I think it was the right way to do it. Because you can't let somebody like that go on.
I mean, but then, later on, there's the chicken thieves. A couple different. So, it's so weird, right? So, there's a couple of guys that steal chickens. And Morgan's like, hey. Let's they publicly shamed them, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, they hung signs, tied them to the stake post in town, and then put a sign on them said I'm a chicken thief.
And that was because all they did was attempt to thieve chickens, right?
Right. Yep.
Now, later on, like someone else attempts
a paragraph to steal. Later.
Right. Someone else attempts to steal chickens, mm-hmm. but he shoots someone and injures them, right? Is that what happened? Right.
Yep.
And so Morgan's like, well, there you go. More brains on the ground.
Yep, absolutely. And that was warranted as well.
So, and slide back a little bit. For those who haven't followed or isn't into this yet, Morgan gets, this is the book where Morgan becomes sheriff, right? Or was it just?
That was the end of, or no, it was the beginning of six. That's right.
Okay, I couldn't remember for sure. So that's a pretty big deal. And I remember, actually, this is really funny because sometimes when things really stick out to me, I remember the first time I hear them. And I was out mowing at an acreage here out of town, I don't know, 2-3 years ago, when I first read that or first heard that. And I was like, well, that's a cool little, it was a bit of a twist I didn't necessarily see coming because I remember he's, what's his face shows up and he's like, here's your star. I think it was right at the end of book five, actually, wasn't it? Because
I thought it was the end of book five.
Because he gives him the star and then Morgan's like, well, it was kind of cool because all the people that he met with going home are all his deputies now, right?
Right. Yep.
Which I like. So, and I appreciate Morgan being the sheriff, but I do feel like, and I don't want to spoil things going forward, but I don't think Morgan should be judge, jury, and executioner.
I agree.
And that does work itself out in a future book. So we won't go any further than that. Because right now, in that instance, Morgan was judge, jury, and executioner all at once.
Mm-hmm.
And traditionally, law enforcement is supposed to be separate from the verdict. And typically... Right. Maybe not the execution, but at least the verdict part of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yep. Yeah, I get it. I know Morgan is who Morgan is, and I know he has to do what he has to do. But there is sometimes that the God damn, that dude has ice water running through his veins.
Yeah, he does. But, I mean, You run through a scenario like him. Dude walks home 250 miles.
Right.
Deals with all this bullshit with his family.
Right.
And then, really, what are you, 6 months to a year down the road?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. But I would say I think it's just about a year, perhaps.
Yeah. I mean, how could you not be cold-hearted and drained by now and done dealing with the bullshit?
Jozic says emotional disconnect, and he's right. Mm-hmm. I'm reading the Black Autumn series right now, and it, man, it's a good series. And the first book deals with a prepper, how do you want to put it? Like a prepper commune, or like not a commune, but like a prepper community that prepares before something bad happens, you know? So then everybody shows up, and there's quite a bit of conversation during the hard times about the need for a benevolent dictator, I guess, mm-hmm. or they have this, they play this entire scenario out. Basically, it's like a convenience store that's buried under the ground, and they know it's going to take like 8 weeks to dig them out. And there's only enough food to survive half the people for the time, you know? So yeah. Basically somebody in there has to decide half these people are going to get executed right now or everybody dies. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Morgan is that type of person.
Yeah. And that kind of seems like, all right. So do you remember, have you ever seen the book Snowpiercer?
I've watched the movie, but I haven't.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Watch the movie.
Yes.
That's yep. kind of that same concept too. That you're talking. Right.
Go ahead.
You, not everybody on the train can live.
Right.
You only have enough, you know, room for enough people.
Unless you want to eat bugs, but that's a whole other story. You know, you're right. Absolutely. So let's talk about Dalton when he shows up in the middle of the night. What a ballsy thing to do, hey?
Can you blame him? I mean, it's one way to not get shot.
Perhaps. Just a good thing to be in a bad mood.
So you see, Morgan clearly sees the IR light on his night vision.
Right.
So he knows it's not, it's somebody capable. And the fact that dude walked up and he could clearly see that his gun was not up.
True. Yep. Good point.
I think made him go, okay, what's going on here?
I got a question. Do you remember back when Jeff first came to Morgan's house
mm-hmm.
and he got him to spend the night? He slept on his couch or whatever, right? And then they disarmed him. Right? Or they took mm-hmm. his gun. But didn't he wake up in the morning and have another gun on him? Or am I wrong about that?
I think because, he did.
Yeah, because I'm wondering if that's intentional with, I don't know, mirroring Dalton. Because remember, Dalton's like, which takes balls the size of friggin', I don't know, cue balls or something. But the dude's like, hey, I'll give you my guns. Can I just sleep here? And then he wakes up in the morning and he has another gun with him anyway, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I'm like, yeah, there's so much, I think, intentional of Jeff in Dalton. You know what I mean? He's like the mm-hmm. spiritual successor to Jeff for sure.
Yeah. And I love Dalton's whole thing. You know, they ask him what he did in a previous life.
Right.
It's like you're reading Dalton and you're getting to know Dalton. It's like, dude, this guy's got to be like special forces or something. He's like, no, I work corrections.
Which actually makes perfect sense because the bullshit they must deal with.
Yeah.
And Dalton, one of his quotes was something along the lines of, if the cameras don't see it, it didn't happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Hunter says, it bugs the shit out of me. He said, everyone gets a pat down. He's not wrong.
No.
And yeah, there's definitely times when people,
Chris,
yeah, you're not wrong. Also, Dixon says, I like when he says he likes hunting men. There's just something. I mean, Dalton was built for post-apocalyptic America, right?
Yeah.
Cause when Chris was on the show, Angry American, he said Dalton was based on what's his name? The winner of season one. He's best friends with him now of Alone. I can't remember the guy's name right now. Tall dude that's like a survivalist built in, you know. But yeah, he so I think maybe he wanted to take the Jeff character, but base him around his friend a little more. So I'm thinking that's probably where that came from, but yeah.
Okay. Well, we gotta find out who that is.
Yeah. Yeah. If you can look a season one winner, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. Rachel Brown says, I have a friend who used to work in corrections. The thing about the cameras is correct. And there have been some interesting stories. I actually have a couple coming on the show either in December or January who both work in corrections. It should be a pretty good interview. I had a good chat with them at Prepper Camp. And yeah, they had a lot of stories to tell. Let's put it that way. What's next? Oh, did you find it?
I'm looking. Who lasted the longest? That's Alone.
That's it. Alone, right?
Oh, it's Alone?
Okay. Yeah, Alone season one. I think I probably said the wrong name because I'm half in the bag. So that's cool.
Alan Kay.
Yeah, Alan. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So big dude, right? Looks like a tall, big dude. Yeah, that's him. So. So what about, this is where we start to see, and of course I don't want to give away the goods per se, but we notice that Thad and Mary are spending an awful lot of time together, and Sarge and Miss K, as Sarge calls her, you know, he likes to spend some time with Miss K as well.
Yep. I mean, I was a little surprised about Sarge and Miss K getting it on, and honestly, I'm amazed the girls gave Mary a second shot.
Yeah, I agree. Because she basically, she gave him up to the...
Yeah, she threw him under the bus.
But they love her. They think the world of her, and they, whatever. Hey, I mean, I get it. You know, I don't know. I don't know where I would have fell on that. It would have been, Hunter says the same thing about Mary, and maybe it's a male thing, because, maybe we're just like, you know what? Friggin' stab them and get rid of them or whatever, but maybe, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but yeah, you're right. I'd forgot about it. Yeah.
And he's right on that one. Sarge is smart. Miss K has the food.
Oh, I just think it's sweet. If Rachel's still in here, I'd love to know what Rachel thinks about Sarge and Miss K and Thad and Mary, because it surprises me a little bit about Thad as well, but it's done in a really tactful way, in a very honorable way.
Yeah.
Thad, well, there's conversations, and I don't remember which book it's in, but, you know, conversations with Morgan about Thad worrying that, you know, he doesn't want to replace his wife and that sort of thing. And I can imagine that would be a huge struggle for sure. And Chris says, I can't believe Eric was allowed to survive. Yeah, I don't know. Something must have just set off in Sarge's head that he was happy with it.
Well, right? I mean, who's the shitty shot that allowed him to survive?
That is true too. Who shot him anyway?
It was either Ted or Mike,
right? Right. Yeah. And yeah, Rachel says, was it Mike that asked Sarge if he was sleeping alone that night? And Yozik over in Telegram says, I think both relationships are moving very good for both situations. And I think he's right. I think for all four people involved, they all need, everybody needs something, right? But those four people in general were definitely alone, you know? And I mean, emotionally alone, right? Like not just, you know, some people can be like Dalton don't care. You know, Dalton doesn't need a woman. He's alone, but he's cool with that. But those four were kind of very much just, like they you could tell they needed somebody psychologically. Mm-hmm. And it's good because the thing about Sarge, he has a soft heart, right? Like he can literally torture a man to death, but at the same time he can, what was it? They said somewhere in this book, Morgan mentions how Sarge has such a soft spot for the kids, how he loves the kids so much, you know? And then when he's dicking around with, the boys, with the soldiers, and they're doing the stupid, Three Stooges routines, you know? Mm-hmm. And Morgan's like, why do you do that? And he's like, well, you know, I've watched them go from being idiots to being men. And that's just what we do, right?
Yeah, he does have the grandpa, you know, fuck around mentality.
It's funny. Yozik over in Telegram and Hunter in where is he on Twitch? Both said that he has the grandpa mentality right there. And it's true. But he's not actually as old as he seems, right? He's only in his 50s. Isn't that what they said?
I think so.
And I pictured him. Oh, there's. Oh, look who showed up. Hi, Rachel.
How's it going?
Hi, guys.
Hey. Not,
since it was a request, I decided to give you guys like 10, 15 minutes rather than going right for lights out.
Nice. No, it's good to have you. Do you want to talk about the relationships first?
Yeah, I see you already put my comment up there about, I think it was Mike that was asking him if he was going to be sleeping alone that time.
Yes, that was kind of sweet, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was so tactfully done.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, as far as they go, right?
Yeah. Oh, wait.
And Chris says, who is Danny's wife? We never hear about her, but she always makes appearances somewhere. It's Danny Bobby. And Bobby, right? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
Danny and Bobby.
Yeah. In this episode, or why do I keep calling it episode? In this book, she's the one that offers to take the kids, right? The two little ones whose parents have TB.
Mm-hmm. Tyler and
Brandy.
Brandy. Yep. Tyler and Brandy's kids, yeah.
Yeah, they're that is that's something we don't think about. Something like TB, something that hasn't been around in North America, at least I don't think, for a long time. And all of a sudden it makes its rousing return in post-apocalyptic America because everybody's beat down, wore out, undernourished, and here we go. Let's you know.
And the medical system is shot.
Yeah.
So
it was fun. I was on. Oh, go ahead, Rachel.
I was going to say things like cholera, which they said was also on the rise, and other things that dysentery. Isn't that another thing that has to do with the cleanliness and the hygiene?
Poor hygiene. Yeah, things
like that. Things like that are obviously going to be on the rise in a situation like this, especially where people don't have the clean water or have the sense to actually keep their water sources clean or take care of their waste. It's bound to happen.
Somebody, Hunter says, don't forget about the ring. I did forget about the ring. That was kind of cool, wasn't it?
Yeah. He didn't give it to her yet though, right?
No. It's just a thing. Right. Yeah. But Morgan did give the Tiffany, hell were they?
The bracelet.
Oh, I heard that. I think I've heard that three or four times thinking it was cufflinks. And I'm like, why the hell would he give her cufflinks? Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
The first go around, I thought that was the case too. And then they started to explain it. It's like, okay, it's just a bracelet.
I guess only the girl would know that.
Yeah, I wouldn't. When I hear cuffs, I think cufflinks. Oh, hi, pup. Oh, we always got to have a puppy appearance there.
Invaded by the dogs.
Hunter threw a good one up there too as well. He says he's worried about that and the pregnancy.
Well,
that does show up later if I remember.
There might be a bit of a story, yeah, to do with pregnancy at some point in the books, but we won't, you know.
So Hunter gets a smackdown for the. I'm guessing that's something that we're going to find later. he's spoiling it.
Who knows? I don't think Hunter
I've got one, I don't know, and another one nodding his head, so.
I think Hunter's reading along as we go, unless maybe he's already gone through it. I can't remember, but.
I know it shows its face in 1 second after.
Yes.
I can't remember if it shows up in the Going Home series, but I thought it did.
I'm 99.99% sure it does, but we'll leave it at that. So,
yeah.
I haven't delivered one. I saw the twins born just like that with no help at all in a hospital bed when all the doctors and everything had gone to another room. So that was fun. And we just had someone in our workshop community have a home birth. So it's definitely doable. I mean, like they said, people have had home births forever. And it's totally good. It's just the problem is that complications would arise more commonly in a setting like this where malnutrition and that sort of thing is commonplace, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it doesn't seem like anybody that's there would have midwife knowledge.
No.
Ted would, though.
Ted?
Ted, if I remember, I think he said he's delivered a couple of babies.
And
Doc.
Doc would too, for sure. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, because none of the other women, all the other women were, I mean, Bobby has no kids and didn't seem to have any interest in having kids.
Nope.
And the rest of them were kind of professional people. Jess is probably too young to have, you know, so maybe Miss K. I'm sure Miss K has some experience with that sort of thing, but
yep.
But yeah, it's definitely it's yeah. Let's see, what else do I have here? So when they catch the chicken thieves and they start talking, I love the public shaming. I thought that was pretty cool because that is very much old fashioned. You know, it almost reminds me of something out of a Monty Python movie, you know, like catch somebody doing something stupid and put a sign around their head. And the only thing missing was, did they have stocks in this? Did they use the stocks this time? No.
Nope. They tied them to the post.
That's it.
Another thing, Chris Dixon just posted, Mary does have medical experience. That is
there we go. Okay.
Oh, okay.
She was the nurse.
That makes sense.
I think so. Nurse or a doctor?
So 2 days, right? I remember they said it was 48 hours or 2 days they were tied to that flagpole. Do you think that was with, I thought of this while I was out blowing snow. Do you think that was without food and water?
I would hope so.
I thought it was just overnight.
I'm sure they said 2 days, which I guess could have been all day one day, overnight, and then all day the next day, right?
Yeah.
But, man, yeah, it was kind of funny. And he's like, I remember one of the thieves is like, but now everybody will think we're chicken thieves. And he's like, well, that's because you are, you jackass.
Exactly.
But, yeah, I thought that was kind of cool. But in that entire interchange of dialogue, it got a little preachy. Now, I'm all about being an anarchist and the free market. But there are times when you can tell Chris's or Angry American's politics come through. And instead of it being regular old dialogue, it's his views on the world and people yakking. You know what I mean? So it's because they're like, well, he has enough, so it shouldn't matter. You know, he has 5 chickens, so I should be allowed to have a chicken. And he spends a lot of time. That entire dialogue, I get it, but it's so on the nose at times that I'm like, all right, I get it. It's cool. I agree with you. Let's move on, you know?
Well, think of how many people that you come across every day have that entitled attitude.
Well, that's true.
And if things went to hell, that's exactly what you would be hearing. Well, he has it. I have just as much right to everything as he does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot of people that think that, and the world hasn't even collapsed yet.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that going on in Canada right now. The, you know, the prices of groceries are up huge, of course. And Loblaws is one of the, we've got like, I don't know, 4 grocery stores in the entire country. And so everybody's making a big deal out of the fact that grocery prices are at their highest level, but profits are at their highest level too. So it's all, again, it's people, well, you know, why don't you share, you know, it's the communistic or the socialist mindset, right? That, well, you're making money, so you shouldn't be. Well, you know what? Go do it yourself, right? That's all it is.
Yeah.
And Chris says collectivism has always been in Morgan's speeches too. And it's true. Like there's times where I'm guessing a page or two of dialogue is kind of Chris hopping up on his soapbox and he's like, hey, this is what I believe, right? And whatever, to each your own, right? You're allowed to, but when you, I don't know, that's the few times when it takes me out. What do they call that? So I remember Siskel and Ebert used to call it willing suspension of disbelief. So it could be a story that if I told you it right now, you would say, that doesn't make sense. But if it's told properly, you jump into that story, you jump into that world, and the rest of it that doesn't necessarily make sense doesn't matter to you, right? Because you're in that world. But things like those little speeches, that's when it takes me out of that world. And I'm like, oh yeah, right. I'm reading a book again. That's all. And that's kind of my little quibble with it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely. For me, that's more of a look into the people I deal with on a daily basis.
And maybe it's just because I don't bother listening to idiots. I don't know. Maybe, but I get it. That's true, Rachel. I get it totally.
Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah.
How about the Eustis police, Eustis PD showing up? I have it written down with quotation marks, rather convenient.
It is rather convenient. Right. And okay, why, with them showing up, why do they need Morgan?
I
was wondering that.
they're like, hey, you're the sheriff, so we'll let you lead us, right? That's what you're. Yeah.
No.
Dude, if I were Morgan, I would have walked away.
Yeah. Hey, guess what? The police is back. Let's take the highest ranking police officer from the Eustis PD, and you're now the fucking sheriff, right?
Exactly. Bingo.
And we're not, I mean, okay, just remember, I'm not shitting on somebody else's creative choices. Well, maybe I am a little bit, but I couldn't do it. You know what I mean? Like, Chris is 1,000 times better author than I could ever even pretend to be. So, yeah. But this is what we're here for, to discuss openly each book. So, yeah, I never thought of that, Nate. To me, it felt like the whole hand of God thing, you know? It's like we write ourselves into a corner and, hey, let's bring these guys in. Ooh. Again, like the group that pairs up with the DHS. Or, you know, you need a bad guy. So, well, we've done DHS before, so let's do DHS again. But let's add some militia type people with them, right? Yeah. And Chris Dixon calls them the useless police. Let's bring that up. And he's like, and the guy was like, we've been here the whole time. I would have dropped the badge and been like, see ya.
Yep. I would have too.
Okay. How do you just hang around as the police? The locals would have known. The, I can never remember the guy's name. The ones that christened Morgan as the sheriff. They would have, wouldn't they know who the Eustis PD were?
Probably not. No. They were, weren't they reserved?
They were, but weren't they stationed right there? Or like they were within?
Across the street from the armory, yeah.
Yeah.
But so, it wasn't their armory. Remember, they were originally out in the woods.
Okay. Yeah.
But are you, do you know the faces of every single police officer in your town?
No, but I'd only need to know one or two of them, right?
Yeah. I mean, we have like three here in our town.
Yeah.
I could pick two of them out.
Right.
Maybe all three.
But yeah, I mean, we have one county Mountie here, and then we have some RCMP. Of course, I know the county Mountie through and through. You know, I'd know it because, I mean, he's a neighbor, right? But
yeah,
the cops, they come every 2 or 3 years, so that's a little different. But I don't know. It's like, hey, we're just floating around in the background. Again, as the story goes on, and I get it, you know, as you go into 10, 11 books, you need to have new protagonists and antagonists to push the story along. I'm cool with that. It's just, I don't know. Like I said, the Eustis PD felt very convenient. What do they call it? Plot armor, or just kind of here it is and we're going to, yeah. But like Chris says, drop the badge and say, see ya.
That would have been
from the opposite side. If you were already the police department here and you find out that the army just decided, hey, look, let's give this guy a star, go send him to work. Would you be willing to step behind him?
I mean,
would you just be willing to suck it up for that?
I think the idea was that they watched for a while so that they knew that he was a cool dude. But there's just so much of that. There's 3 or 4 things in this book that kind of strikes me like, it felt like the wrong choice, perhaps. Let's put it that way.
If you're law enforcement, you step up.
Right.
For your community. Yeah. Why didn't any of these guys step up in the beginning?
Yozik said, why weren't they running it when they had those crappy people running the town with the first sheriff? Right. Yeah, that's right. I forgot about remember the fake sheriff that had the little,
sheriff that disappeared.
Yeah. But yeah, it's true. Hunter says weak with a whole lot of vowels in the middle there. So, just one of those things. That's all. And Chris says it could be that they were also lacking on supplies, ammo, arms, and such, but they weren't.
Exactly.
Because they show up and they're like, surprise, here's keys. The keys. Yeah, we have the keys. It's like, yeah, but Hunter makes a good point. No leaders. So maybe that's what it comes down to, is they just were like, I don't know. It's a hard thing to twist your brain around. And maybe I'm beating a dead horse a little bit, but you know what they say, you keep beating a dead horse, all you get is a bigger mess, right?
Yeah, sometimes it's fun.
That's true. I also wrote down more of Sarge's torture. It's never a bad thing. What'd you think?
Yeah, he was having fun.
Yeah. What was
and the deal? Gloves off.
The gloves are off. Yes. What did they say? If we see them in a
gloves on situation, what's going to happen now?
Right. Yes. Yep. And if they see them in a uniform, they were allowed to execute them. Right. That was the idea.
Yeah.
Because that meant war crimes. Is that the idea? I guess. Or
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. What was Sarge's choice of torture in this book?
The whip.
How did he build that? Because I thought it was kind of cool.
A handle with an eye hook, or the eye for a hook.
Yep.
That he ran rope through, frayed the rope, and then dunked it in water and ground it in sand.
Yep.
Who the hell comes up with that shit? Like, you know, Chris must have got that from a real person. You know what I mean? Like, oh, that. Yeah. And then the dude's like, what was it? He gets close to him and didn't he punch Sarge or give Sarge a good wallop?
Yeah, he kicked Sarge or pushed him. It.
And then Sarge is like, I wasn't really going to hit you, but I guess now I'm going to.
Yeah.
And then didn't he hit him across the face with it?
I thought it was a kidneys.
Kidneys, maybe it was. Okay. Yeah.
Ted got him in the kidneys. Ted
punched him in the kidneys a few times.
Yeah.
I remember feeling that. I was out blowing snow, and I'm like, oh, I feel that. His kidneys hurt so bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Yeah, that was... Hearing that whole thing and then hearing him get tied up and then coming up with the plot to hand him over to Cecil.
That's... I was trying to remember what happened to him. That's right. They send him out as...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, to go work with Cecil. Right?
Yeah. Yep. I like Cecil a lot.
Yeah, I don't remember what book he came in on. Was it five?
This one. This is the first one that Cecil was in.
Okay.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay, because, yeah, that's right. Because Morgan comes in and they're like, there's this quiet guy in the corner that they're wondering who he was. And that was Cecil, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, Cecil's a good guy. I like him.
He reminds me. There was an old guy. He's since passed away. His name was George Gavel, and he lived up the cove for me in Digby Neck before he moved out here. And he was the type of guy that had a tractor, and he would always come down and bush hog your property, and he wouldn't take anything for it. Maybe you could give him a case of beer or some bag of potatoes or something, but he'd never take any money for it. And he reminds me of that guy. Every time I think of Cecil, I picture old George Gavel, because tall, like the guy was in his 80s, and he was just a massive dude, you know, and... Yeah. Just that kind of salt of the earth farmer type guy. But because he, then this is where they start talking about the possibility of getting the power back on too, right?
Yeah. The power on and then planting all the crops and stuff.
There are so many random things that happen in this because the bee people, the apiary people, you can tell I'm not good with, what was it?
Mario, it was the husband. Yeah. I don't remember the wife's name.
Jesus, it's so good to have you around, Rachel, because I remember concepts, but never names. But yeah, so Mario's like, hey, here's a surprise for you. Have some, what was it? Was it pig shit with bees on
bees,
it?
Or, yeah, to get Billy's gang.
And he killed him, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
That was great.
And then over here, Yozik says Batman. That's another dude. Batman is Jenna's husband.
Yeah. He's been around for a while.
Yeah, he had the samurai sword. Wasn't he buck ass naked with a samurai sword?
Yep.
That'd probably be me. Yeah, that would be pretty funny.
Yeah,
I can still picture when they were saying about, they just faced down those guys in the road, and then Thad looks at Morgan and just says naked.
That's right.
And just starts dying laughing.
Mario, one thing I thought was funny was when Morgan starts talking to him about pulling the mineral oil out of the transformers. And I'm thinking, okay, you want to rebuild the power grid, but at the same time, you're going to strip all the oil. Yes. Did you think of that too, Nate?
Yeah. Yep.
I'm like, you can't have your cake and eat it too, buddy. One or the other, right?
Yeah, it was the mineral oil to the diesel.
They were going to cut diesel 50-50, right? Yeah. Because he has an old was it Deuce and a Half or something or whatever they call it? Yeah.
Yeah, Deuce and a Half.
Which will basically run on anything, right?
Yeah, anything you dump in that.
That's crazy. I've seen that. Yeah, there was. Yeah, yeah. Which is cool. I met a guy at Tactical Response that was getting ready to run his off of straight canola oil. And I thought, that's kind of cool. Oh, who we got? Oh, Mr. Palmer's. Hey, we got a foursome now. This is great. Let's bring us
You didn't have to make that sound so dirty, you know.
I'm really good at that, you know. I could have called it a four-way, but that would have been a whole other story.
Especially with there only being one woman.
Exactly. I was just going to say, and especially with the company.
I don't know where your brain is, John, but when four people play golf together, it's called a foursome. So I don't know what the hell you're talking about, buddy.
I'm a truck driver, so my brain is always in one place.
Oh, yes. Yes, I totally get it. A term I had never heard before, and I'm sure it's slightly racist, but the Chinese fire drill. Had you guys ever heard that term before?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
So is that just the term for like something that looks really disorganized? Is that the idea?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard it before. And
so one thing where I always heard the term used that was is you know, just everybody, you know, a carload of people pull up to a stoplight and at a red light, you just jump out and run around the car and jump. And then wherever you're at when the light turns green, you jump in and take off. So it'd be a different person driving every time.
we had a name. I can't remember what we called it, but it definitely wasn't a Chinese fire drill. But we used to do that a lot in high school. So that makes sense. Byron says, heard it and done it. One thing that Chris is good at or not good at is reusing his sayings or his words and that sort of thing. Good to have you, Nat. He says, head note, thanks for reading the book so I don't have to. I only have so many Audible credits.
Read as loosely as possible.
I should do a giveaway. Can you give Audible credits? Like, can you? I must. There must
tell
be
him, one. Tell him to join the Telegram group. Book club group, and I'll get him.
Here, hang on.
I'll get him set up.
All right, hang on one second here. Where is that? We're going to find the book club group if I can find it. Here we are. Let's share the link. View group.
I have everything but 11, so 11 I'm going to figure out.
Okay, here, I think. Let's see if it worked. There you go. Nat, if you're on Telegram, come by and join the book club group. This is where it's at, so. Yeah, but that would be maybe I'll do a giveaway for some Audible credits if I can figure out a way to do it. That would be fun.
Speaking of that, you and I'll have to talk when we get done.
Sure. Yes.
I haven't seen that yet.
Which?
From Chris.
Oh, okay. I don't know. Anyway,
we'll talk after.
Yeah, it's fine. You got me all. Yeah, it's fine. I'm happy. Yeah. So, so Chinese fire drill. That was one. What about the bombing at the market? That was. Everybody blamed themselves, it seemed, for that, hey? Like, Morgan blamed himself for taking the kids. Taylor was the one that, was it Jess that sent Taylor to go pick up the bag?
Yeah.
Situational awareness failed everybody that day.
Everybody.
Yeah. Everybody.
Because I'm sure everyone has been to the airport at some point.
Oh, yeah.
And they make the announcement, unattended baggage will be taken away immediately.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you don't leave a bag and then run away or even walk away briskly and not think, well, shit, something's wrong there, right?
Yeah. And what dumbass, and I'm sorry to say this, what dumbass went running towards the bag to go get it when you don't just all of a sudden start yelling, get the fuck away from the bag and get the fuck away from the dude selling the moonshine with all the glass.
Right. And yes, I thought that was when Sarge made that, he's like, that was absolutely brilliant. And they're like, we blew up a guy with moonshine and he's not wrong. It was a pretty ingenious kind of ploy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The thing is, it was with all the girls there. Right. And all the girls have absolutely no training, absolutely no forethought, absolutely no concept of all the dangers that there possibly are. These are the ones that have been sheltered their entire lives.
That's
between
true.
The teenage girls that have been sheltered, And Jess, who was the sheltered little girl at home, went to college, and the only thing she knows is what she's experienced around Morgan.
And even Eric, who minimal training.
Yeah.
That's true. Eric was kind of green, you know.
Kind of?
I mean, Eric's still National Guard. So right. That should be standard, like, day number two of training.
He was DHS.
Well, still, yeah. You're government. That's day two. Don't go near the unintended package unless you are a bomb squad.
Okay, have you seen the ATF training videos where they're training them how to go in and arrest people and stuff?
No, I'll have to look at those.
Yeah, do some searching around on YouTube and find some of that, because you'll completely understand and when you're, yeah, I mean, there, it's not like FBI or CIA training, you know. So
do they have shoot the dog first as step number one?
Evidently they have flag everybody in the room with the firearm.
Yeah,
training.
Make sure you shoot the dog.
I was on, we had a, Jack had a survival podcast expert council live episode today.
That was good today.
Yeah.
It was cool. I really enjoyed it. So there's a dude in the comments. I can't remember who it was. And his comment, I'm like, oh man, that sounds like some real conspiracy bullshit. I'm like, there's no way. The dude's like, have you heard about the robot dogs that San Francisco just approved? Yeah. That? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, I'm thinking, all right, this dude's been like drinking the Alex Jones Kool-Aid, right? So it basically, he's like, have you heard about the robot dogs that San Francisco just approved for deadly force? And I'm like, there's no way that's fucking true. 2 seconds on Google, and I'm like, mainstream USA Today has the full story. And I'm like, what in the sweet ever-loving shit is that? And it was a legit story.
It's fucking California.
I do not understand.
Hey, you got to pronounce that right. It's California. Yeah. Yeah. I can't even spit it out.
Yeah.
California.
I thought that in, 1989, Paul Verhoeven dealt with that very well in RoboCop. Like, how bad thing, you know what I mean? Like, anyway, whatever. Enough said. I
would have thought we would have learned something from the Terminator movies, right?
That too. Hey, but yeah. Here we are. So,
and 1984, but apparently not.
So nobody learned anything from 1984, or we wouldn't be in the situation, politically speaking, that we are, right?
Exactly.
Or they learned what they want to do.
That is true. Right. Maybe it's a playbook.
Here's our guidebook. Yeah.
Excuse me.
Instruction manual.
I always refer to this as the Going Home series. Apparently, it's actually the Survivalist series. Have you guys seen that? Which is really weird, because I don't know. Even on the covers, it doesn't say the Survivalist series, does it?
No, but it does every time you bring it up.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I always go on Goodreads to find some of the funny comments and different things. I learned something about this. As I was reading along, there was actually, this was on Amazon, and it was a less than stellar review of the book series. And they said he was basically trying to play on another author's cred, right? So I didn't know this, but an author named Jerry Ahern wrote a 29-book series from 1981 to 1990, also called The Survivalist. Hmm. Has anyone read that or heard of it? Or
no.
So we're talking like 29 books, and it's all on audiobook now, so I'm all excited to check it out. But it's got a bit of a Mad Max vibe. But it's a collapse America that was invaded by Russia. And it's a very much an 80s masculine men story, you know? But okay. So it sounds like it's got a bit of Wolverines mixed in there, you know? And So I don't know. We'll see. I'm going to check it out. I had no idea that series even existed. I'm sure it feels a bit dated because the first book came out 41 years ago. But yeah, I mean, I'm always looking for good post-apocalyptic content, so we'll try that at some point.
Yeah, I'll have to go find that, see if I can get it.
Yeah, there was 27 books, 1 through 27, and then there was two unnumbered books that kind of fit in between, kind of like how Stephen King did with his Dark Tower series, that sort of thing.
Okay.
So yeah, I thought that was kind of cool. Let's see. I'm going to read you a couple of quotes because I always love the reviews from Goodreads. I'll start with a couple of the good ones first. So let's see. It said, the Survivalist series was a bit annoying as it's based mostly on conspiratorial plot of the government getting people dependent on the state. After people needed welfare, food stamps, any form, they were somehow not as worthy to freedom and would blindly comply with the government. This political philosophy is wrong in my eyes, but there are some that believe this.
I'm like, has that person seen the past 2 years?
Most right. of these reviews were written in the mid 20 teens, right? Like when the books were first coming out. So
okay, so they voted for Obama, and you know they didn't see the they left their blinders on.
I think so. Yes. let's see. So this one was a good one. Said, I really enjoyed this series. I describe this book as in between. It's setting up Morgan as local sheriff. He has some minor issues to deal with, does some organizing. DHS links up with some local gang, causes minor troubles. We're being prepped for the confrontation between Morgan and DHS, which I thought that was a perfect. The reason I put that in there was I thought that was a perfect summary of what the book was.
Yeah.
An in between
book. Yeah. Right? That was, yeah. Hey, remind me real quick, is it this book where the squirrel has the little bug in it?
Yeah.
Warble.
Yeah.
Warble. So, yeah,
it's one thing. Little things like that stick out to me as how much stuff that they waste. Because my first thought was he threw it in the woods. Why didn't he throw it in the maggot bucket?
That's what I thought.
I thought, why didn't he feed it to the dog? The chickens, the dogs, anything. Yeah. That's funny. We all thought the same thing because I remember right where I was when I heard him say, we'll throw it in the woods. I'm thinking, cut it up, cook it up, feed it to the dogs, you know, like
anything, but don't you in a situation like that, you don't waste anything.
But you're right. The maggot bucket would have been perfect. Throw it in there, let it decompose. And cause that was, it reminded me of when, do you guys remember when Jack did an episode on, I think it was like bot flies or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, same type of thing.
Yeah,
black soldier flies. I think is
that's it. Yes, black soldier flies.
Yep. So I'll go a little bit down the rabbit hole, and just people can deal with this.
Sure.
So we raise rabbits here. Everybody knows that.
Yep.
And one of our does delivered 7 kits a couple weeks ago. Well, so 4 of them didn't make it through the night.
Okay.
So instead of throwing them in the garbage, we threw them to the chickens.
Sure. And I didn't realize they were as carnivorous as they are.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Are you kidding me, dude?
I know. They're like mini raptors. I forget that sometimes. Dude. I know.
So every Thanksgiving, we give them the carcass, the turkey carcass.
Oh.
Dude, they will pick that shit clean in like 30 minutes.
That's like a human eating a monkey, man. That's like,
it is,
you know, yeah. That's crazy.
But I mean, they pick it clean. They will literally eat anything.
You know, I got to think, we had chickens for a lot of years. I don't ever remember, maybe this is crazy. I don't ever remember feeding them meat. We always fed them like rice and noodles, you know, whatever we had for leftovers. But yeah, that's crazy.
You
want
to see them get a hold of a mouse?
Oh, I bet. Yeah, they have fun with that.
SOE's got it on video. He's going around moving his garbage cans around, getting all the mice out from underneath, and he picks one up. There's like 6 mice underneath it, and sure as shit, here come 3 fucking chickens, and dude, they fucking grab them all and fucking take off.
That is awesome. It's just funny. You don't necessarily think, you know it, right? It's up here, but you don't think about it. Yeah.
Dude, they will eat anything.
That's funny. Because they are. A lot of people call them like mini raptors, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So here's another one. I like this one. It's short. Said, I feel bad finishing another book from this series because I just don't want it to end. When these people were reading it, there was like 7 or 8 books out. So they're like, I don't want to get there. Let's see. Of course, here's another one. And I'm glad that I'm reading audio or listening audio. But they said, totally distracted by the obvious lack of proofreading. Planning on taking a break from this series for a little while. Let's hope the next book is better. It is unreal how many people complained about proofreading. And I think because a lot of his first books were self-published.
Yeah.
But of course, with Duke Fontaine, you don't notice any of the mistakes or very.
Oh, few. You do in six.
Really? Did I miss some, or was I just?
Yeah, I caught some, but
there's like five or six big ones that you hear.
Yeah,
and it's all of a sudden the voice changes.
I've noticed that a few times where the voice, the audio quality is significantly muffled, or you can tell it was recorded at a completely different time.
Yep, that's exactly
Thad
what it
doesn't sound like Thad several times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I've written that up mostly until y'all said that, to the fact that I listened to it at like 1.5 speed or something like that, or 1.75 speed, I think is what I listened to. No, it's 1.55. Let's get technical.
So here's which two is, good ones. Oh, go ahead, John.
I was just going to say, you mentioned earlier you're talking about being on Jack's show today. I almost cannot listen to him live because Jack just talks a little slow for my speed. So I listen to him at double speed on replays.
That's funny. Podcasts, I've never gotten into speeding up, but audiobooks I do quite often, especially if the narrator is rather slow.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the Stephen King ones, I will speed up quite a bit.
If you got a good person reading the books, you don't need to speed them up.
I like Duke. I'm good with Duke.
Yeah.
So I've been reading the Black Autumn series, and other than the first, you've listened to 299 Days, Nate.
I've gotten through book four. I started five, and then my source went bye-bye.
So the guy that narrates those books is also narrates or reads the Black Autumn series, all of them except for the first book.
Okay. So
I like his voice. He has a good voice. He sounds older than, say, Duke, but I don't know. I could be wrong, but yeah. But he's a good narrator. So let me read you these two reviews. I thought they were a really good juxtaposition. They're complete opposites. So we'll start with the negative one, and then we'll finish up with the positive one. Said, what happened to intelligent conversation? To women taking roles more than just hanging out and cooking as an occasional piece of ass that he seems surprised to actually get each time. The writing's a little weird. And no other couples really have any storylines or intelligent or romantic conversation either. The women could do so much more and provide so much more support and also ideas. They can also defend the place more. Seems like his and Danny's wives are just floating in the background somewhere. They never go to town. They never visit the neighbors. They're made to look boring and lazy. Mel seems to lay around on the couch and smarts off as a role or as cooking. So that's one. Now, this other review says, I really enjoyed this book. These were both written by women, of course. Fred, Jess, Taylor, and Leanne really step up and show they're equal to the guys. Morgan shows he is always great under pressure, blah, blah, blah. So how can two people read the same book and come away with two completely different takeaways?
Well, the whole deal there is you're looking at one person was looking at all the group of girls and the other one was just looking at Danny and Morgan's wives, and what they fail to even, you know, grasp, I think, is the fact that, you know, that's what some women want to do. And how about don't criticize women for, you know, being the way they want to be. If they want to be a housewife and that's all they ever want to be, that's freaking fine. If they want to be a freaking soldier and go out and kill people all day, that's freaking fine too.
Let's get Rachel's input. What do you think, Rachel?
Well, Mel was a housewife before everything started.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that was, yeah.
So, yeah, she was the one who kept the home. She was the one who did all the groceries. She was the one who did all of what you would do if you're the, well, at this point now with Brian Oleksovich, he said he's the house husband. So
I've played that role in the past as well. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, me too. Had dinner ready every time she got home from work.
Actually, yeah, I do a fair bit of that now. So.
Everybody has to step into that role at some point. Some people prefer being in that role. If I remember with Bobby, she did some work cleaning at, was it
rich people
retirement home?
I thought it was richer people. It was like condos or people. Yeah,
you're right. It was rich people, because she was saying she was wondering how they did nowadays,
or how they didn't do.
how they didn't do. So she was still more or less doing the quote housewife work. It's just she didn't always do it at home. She did it for other people as well, and like a
housewife. She was a professional housewife.
Exactly.
So here's so go ahead. Yep.
I was going to say, if this is what they were used to spending their time doing before, they're doing the exact same thing now, but without all the modern conveniences. How much longer is all of that going to take without your modern conveniences?
Good point.
Mm-hmm. And it baffles me how so few women take care of so many people's like needs for food and stuff like that.
Because you're right, that would be a huge job. It's really just Mel, Bobby, and Miss Kay, right? I think. Or maybe Mary, too. Does Mary?
Mary.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mary's not around that much, though.
No.
She'll go help Dad, but she's not in. You don't hear about her anywhere else.
No, you just kind of assume that she's helping them out when Thad's not around and when she's not in the garden and stuff. It's kind of what I feel like it leaves you at, but. Yeah, that's it. And these women are doing this without like a professional style, you know, commercial kitchen.
Yeah.
So
they got no natural gas, I don't think, right? What do they
found out that natural gas is on at some spots,
which is really cool. Yeah. I thought that
but
was
they don't
neat.
Have access.
Right.
No propane,
no natural gas, none of that stuff. All they got is they're like, I guess cooking over fire. Yeah.
Is that how they're cooking? What were they cooking with? Was it wood?
Coleman stove.
Is it? Yeah. Okay. There it is. Yep. Hunter says.
They said something about a kerosene deal too. So,
I mean, they're not the fastest thing in the world to cook on either. So can you imagine preparing? Because at this point there must be close to 2 dozen people there. Would that be about right? I mean, it must be close to that, right, for the group?
Yeah.
Yeah, at least 20. So they're preparing full meals on these little Coleman double burner stove. That's a lot of work.
Yeah. All right. So my take on those two reviews on the women's situation, they miss Jamie.
Oh, yeah, right.
Being the badass.
Yep.
And where the hell are all of these... The women just lay over and take it.
Yeah.
And all these, they just lay down and have sex. Because that's not in any of these books that I've ever read.
Never. That's one thing.
I haven't seen any sex at all. The Going Home series, because it has none of the sex scenes that any of the other series have.
Some of them just randomly put that shit in there and you're like.
Zombie rules.
Oh, I stopped. I dug it for a while. But when he hit the reset button and you're like, was it like 4 books in? And you're like, everybody you like is just, you're like, fuck it. I'm done. But I may go back to it at some point. I don't know. But
yeah, the closest thing that Morgan and Mel get to talking about sex is when she says, you're rude, you're crude. Guess who's not getting screwed?
That's right. Exactly. That was really funny.
That was cute.
They're so sweet. You know, they have such a... Yeah, you can just tell they've been together a long time and they have that kind of secret language where, you know, couples just know each other.
Oh, you mean when you get to that point where you can cuss each other without saying a word?
Absolutely. Just a look, you know, or a touch on a shoulder. You're like, oh, I'm in trouble. So anybody have any other thoughts on anything we didn't touch on that I might have forgot about?
All right, so we do need to get to the normal. Where are we going with this series next?
Yes, well, that's what I was kind of... So because both Rachel and John, of course, this is their first read-through. Mm-hmm. Now, John has slid halfway into book 7, so he might be a little ahead of the thing, but...
No, I finished book 7 today.
Okay, so let's take Rachel first, and let's get your prediction for where book 7's heading, Rachel.
Oh, I got no damn clue. Aside from Morgan wants some serious revenge, which we all know and was announced at the end of book six. It sounds kind of like Dalton has a pretty good idea of where everybody's at. Oh no, he knew where Billy's guys were before.
Yeah, he knows where the camp is.
It's the Elks camp or something like that. Yeah.
But are they still at the Elks camp? Because he was talking about, or they were talking about how the Billy's team moved in with the DHS agents. So it's, are they going to go trying to attack the wrong place? Are they going to try to attack the right place? Obviously, they're going to try to attack somebody somewhere. And then the whole terrorist plot thing that the DHS is doing, you know, you just fucked with the people that you're trying to blame everything on. You just kind of put them in the clear in other people's eyes.
Yep.
Because they were hurt too. So now you put all of them all on the same side.
So Chris talks about the field. Was it Field Expedient Hospital or whatever they called it there? And he said he thinks they'll get overwhelmed with sick people. Because, of course, all of a sudden you now have a medical center that didn't exist before and a lot of sick people. So yeah, that's a good prediction. I can live with that for sure.
Yeah.
And you've got all the people that are going to be coming in for a splinter. Because that's the mentality. You're taking people that have had that mentality for the last how many decades?
Yeah.
They've had to live it rough. Now they feel like they can go back to being coddled.
You listen to Cam and Colby on the Casual Preppers, either you guys at all? No. So I can't remember which one of it is. One of them works in the medical field, and they talk about that all the time, how people will come in with a headache, or they'll come in with a splinter, or they'll come in, and it just, you can tell it frustrates them because it, you know, it bogs down resources, it wastes time, and you're like, if you just went home and took an Advil or whatever it is, he says, yeah, exactly, right? So. But yeah, it is. It's hard right where the series is. I mean, we know that we're heading for a confrontation with DHS and the goons. But beyond that, it's really hard to predict where the series goes from here. Doug Dixon, this is somebody I hadn't seen in here before. It's kind of nice to have. But he said, this is one of my favorite series. I have read, listened to the whole series multiple times. We'll try to avoid spoilers. It's good to have. I think I've seen about three names in here tonight that I've never seen before, which is great.
Yeah.
I love that. Maybe, I don't know, maybe Thursday nights work better for some people. I don't know. So I know traditionally Saturday nights were always the dumping ground for TV. They always counted that nobody was home on Saturday nights. Sunday nights, they knew everybody was home by then, but whatever. No big deal.
Get here right here Monday.
Yeah. But yeah, no, this is, I like hearing, I wish John was still on because I would have got him to make his predictions as well. But it's kind of fun once you get beyond book seven. Oh, there's John. Yes. And hey, Autumn Dawn Endeavors. Good to have you. So that's what, like three or four at least tonight. And Yozik says over in Telegram, Saturday night's quite often family night. And he's right. So maybe we'll just try to do it on a Thursday night instead. We'll see if it works for people. I know there's never a perfect night for this, but, you know, whatever. It is what it is.
Yeah, for me, so, I'm usually just getting off work or something. I'm running a little late tonight. But
should we let John make predictions? Because he's read book seven. I don't know how to do this. So.
Yeah, I can predict book seven really good.
Yeah, he'll know what's coming up, right?
But no, I better not do any spoilers.
Nah, that's all right. Well, let's go around the horn one more time. What's everybody reading currently? Nate, do you want to? What have you read anything recently that stuck out to you that you really enjoyed?
I'm kind of going down the interview deep hole. I've really liked a lot. I've started binge listening to the Sean Ryan show.
How is that?
He's got some great interviews on that. I sent you earlier one that was Reeves, the guy that was Escobar's pack mule, basically flying stuff around. really, really great interview, and he's got a nice setup how it is. He's done Mike Glover and Eddie Gallagher, the Blackwater issue. So, I mean, it's really great interviews, nicely done. And they're really easy to listen to.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm always looking for good podcast recommendations, you know?
Yep.
How about you, Rachel? What have you been reading or listening to lately?
Thanks to Scramblin', I started on Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance.
How is that? I've never read it.
It's actually pretty interesting. Just for the, for me, it's more of looking at somebody's philosophical view of things and just the different ways that people view the world.
Okay.
I really don't want to go into it any more than that because there's way there you have to, you would have to actually be delving into people's mental illness also. So well, there's,
I know back in my evangelical days, I read, there was a Christian version of that book called Prayer and the Art of Volkswagen Maintenance. And I read that years ago, and it was a bit of a, it was like an autobiography kind of road trip book too. And it was interesting. So, I might have to delve into it. Is. What's that?
That's how this is.
Okay. It's I think it was very much
autobiography-ish on a road trip.
Okay. Yeah. That's what this was. I picked it up because it was very much, it just kind of intriguing. Right. So I'm reading currently the Black Autumn series by Jeff Kirkham. He's also the co-founder of Black Rifle Coffee Company and the inventor of the Rat's Tourniquet, which is really kind of cool. It is an EMP, of course, kind of scenario. The writing is incredible in it. I think it's some of the best writing of any. I'd put it right up there with One Second After, pretty damn close anyway. And for an ex-military guy to, obviously he must have had some help with it because he just did really, really, yeah, the book is really good, the whole series. But so we also have, let's see what we got here. Jozik, I think, did I lose it? He was saying what he was reading. Brandon Sanderson's new Mistborn book. And that might have been the only one there. And then Doug Dixon says, Franklin Horton's Borrowed World series, currently on book 7. Very similar to the Home series. Huh. Anybody touch on that at all?
I have not read that one yet.
Man, every time I think I'm going to run out of good post-apocalyptic fiction, I'm like, hey, here's a 29-book series I've never listened to before that's highly recommended. So, and yes, so Doug Dixon says, I listened to Black Autumn. It was pretty good. Are the other books same 3 weeks from a different perspective? Yes. So this is the weird thing about the Black Autumn series. It tells, so the first four books are all, they all take place during those first 21 days of the collapse, but each one is from a different place in North America or a different mindset or a different person. So the first one is that like prepper group, you know, it's like 250 people who have this prepper place set up. Another one is this Latin American or Mexican drug cartel guy who decides to invade America. And yes, you can absolutely read them in no particular order. And then there's a companion book that is like about 3 hours long. That's the president on Air Force One dealing with the collapse as well. And then after that, it goes into winter time. So it kind of skips ahead and then it tells the story. So far I'm on the first winter book and it's back to the prepper camp thing. So it's really cool. And Chris says, I'm on book 3 of the Black Autumn series. It's very good. Just had my first Black Rifle coffee this morning. When I go, I think Chris Dixon, if you know, I think I can pick up Black Rifle in Edmonton when I go up tomorrow. So I may get some just to try it, but it's definitely worth reading. I've enjoyed it. Definitely. Yeah. I think like I said, I'm book 5 or 6 out of 9 altogether.
Cool.
And Jozik says the Alex Fletcher book box set is really good as well. So we're always looking for new things to read. So, all right, guys, I think we're good. So we will, oh, John Palmer's back. Maybe, maybe not. You still there, John? We'll ask him what he's reading real quick if he's here.
really, honestly, I'm not listening to much of anything other than this series. And I have listened to a few other series. There's a whole series of books I've been listening to by an author named Stephen Mansfield. He's a Christian artist, and he's actually got a whole series of books that he does on some of the presidents that we've had. And okay. Then I've been listening actually to the Bible in different translations and stuff too. So
speak multiple languages, do you?
No.
I'm being a smart ass. I'm sorry. I know. I get it.
I don't even speak English proficiently. So.
That's my wife will tell you. So
glad I'm not the only one.
Yep. All right, guys. I guess with that, then we'll close up the show. I really appreciate this was great having all four of you. I appreciate it. I know Rachel is like running on 3 hours sleep, or that's about all she'll get tonight. But thank you guys for coming in. And guys, tune in. I guess we'll see you next year, right? 2023 right? Will be the next. Yeah. Yeah, it'll be, I guess.
Next year, maybe next month.
Yeah, next month. It's the dad joke, right? Hey, I'll see you next year, folks. So, all right. We will wish you all a Merry Christmas. And Friday and Saturday will be pre-recorded episodes. And then Sunday will be a live interview episode. I believe I have PA Prepper coming on, which will be really cool, talking about his he does all my tech work. You know, he hosts my website and all of that. So we'll be talking to him about that. So
I missed the was it because you were sick that you didn't get to go to Texas?
Yeah. No, not sick at all. I ended up it's kind of an embarrassment of riches, but I ended up picking up 3 significantly large snow removal customers, like huge, that came really close to doubling my income. And I needed to be here to make sure that all of that went smoothly. I couldn't justify going away for 10 days when snow was coming and I had brand new customers that I had to make sure were taken care of. So it was one of those things. It was great to have, but it sucked that it happened all at once, you know?
Yeah, you know, yep, pros and cons, right? That's why. Yep.
What's that, Rachel?
But now you've got a property in Tennessee.
I sure do. Yes, we do. Yeah. So if nobody's heard, we bought just over 10 acres in Tennessee. And Dawn Sutton, if you guys know Dawn, she is just like heaven sent. She took it upon herself today to go down to that property for me and took video footage and aerial footage, everything of it. I am so friggin' excited and blessed to have friends like that. So that's all I can say. It was just awesome. So I'll have some video to put up just to kind of give you guys a feel for where we're going to be. It's exactly what we were looking for, and I'm pretty friggin' excited. So got to get a little bigger taste of that freedom land, you know, but
in the escape route.
Yeah. Hey, you know, right. I guess I've said it enough on recorded audio and video now that it's too late to take back, isn't it? So that's exactly, yeah, it is what it is. Right. So a cottage, a bunch of bunk houses, and it'll be our property, and it'll be a vacation property until it needs to be more. Let's just put it at that. Right. So, all right, guys, that's it from us this evening. We will see
you. Good night. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Oh yes. Merry. I love it. I've been saying Merry Christmas for about 2 weeks now. So Merry Christmas, folks. And as always, stay happy, stay healthy, and have a great week.
Bah humbug.